"You," he said in stunned recognition as his eyes went even wider. His grip on her neck relaxed, and he traced his fingers down her face, tenderly feeling the contours of her brow, her nose, her cheeks, her lips. His touch sent a shiver through her. Pinned beneath him, all Noah could do was stare, entranced. Then he coughed, and black liquid spilled forth from his lips. It was thick and lustrous, and it had the same consistency as blood. "Is this how Cordolians bleed?" Noah wondered, struggling to comprehend what she was seeing. Numbness seeped through her as time slowed to a crawl and Ashrael slumped forward, his eyes going blank. A strong hand yanked Ashrael's limp form back at the last second, saving Noah from being crushed under his weight. She gasped in horror as a black dagger was pulled from his back. One of the warriors, a hard, scary-looking Cordolian with brilliant amethyst eyes, muttered something under his breath before calling for Ziara.
"He ain't dead, human," he growled,
turning to Noah, who was gaping.
"Whatever you did to him just then must have pulled him out of the arms of the goddess."
For some reason, he sounded almost conciliatory.
He dropped Ashrael to his knees like a rag doll. The assassin's eyes were closed, but they flickered and twitched as a thin stream of black blood trickled from his mouth.
"Our orders were to kill him if this failed. I was aiming for his heart, but then he opened his mouth and spoke, so I angled it away at the very last moment. If he can talk, then maybe there's hope for him yet. If the goddess has mercy, he'll survive."
"For a silent one to speak is unheard of," Elgin said, a note of reverence in his voice. "It means his mind bond is no longer impenetrable. I don't know what you did to him, human, but perhaps this situation can be salvaged."
"We need to get him into stasis," Ziara snapped, running to Ashrael's side with a medikit. She got to work, rolling him over and applying some mysterious substance to the bleeding wound in his back. "Coag gel will only hold him together for so long."
"He's alive."
As she was helped up from the floor, mixed emotions swirled through Noah. Relief, fear, confusion, helplessness. She realized she was shaking. Near-death experiences could do that to a soul, she supposed. She closed her eyes and took a deep breath, searching for the familiar reassurance of the bond. It seemed crazy, but unlike everything else in her world, the bond was constant. It was starting to feel like the only sure thing in her tortured, chaotic life. It silenced the voices in her head and made her feel normal. It made her feel sane.
A hover stretcher appeared from nowhere, and Ashrael was unceremoniously bundled onto it, the warriors flanking him as they spirited him away to receive treatment.
"He's a tough bastard."
Rickle glanced over his shoulder at her, a strange mixture of compassion and amusement in his sharp amber eyes.
"I suspect this isn't nearly enough to kill him. Besides, these touched ones have all kinds of self-preservation techniques up their sleeves when it comes to near-mortal wounds. See? His bleeding's already stopped."
Before Noah could form an answer, the warriors disappeared in a dark rush of armor and weapons, leaving her to cling tightly to the precious silence that remained. Silence was golden, because it told her that Ashrael was still alive. Chapter 13. A strange scene greeted Noah when she returned to the homestead. Elgin led her into the main house, a ramshackle turn-of-the-millennium structure with a faded tin roof. They crossed the wide porch and entered an open living space decorated with odd bits of furniture. A faded floral-patterned sofa sat amongst worn leather armchairs and a magnificent, but slightly threadbare, Persian rug. But what astonished Noah most was the motley gathering of humans and Cordolians in the room. General Tarak was there, sitting in a winged armchair with all the gravitas of a king holding court. He looked up as Noah entered, his crimson gaze missing nothing as he scrutinized her. Beside him sat the one called Zal. He wore a relaxed smile, reclining in his chair with his booted feet crossed in front of him. He was the very picture of elegance, his long white hair, pointed ears, and curving dark horns giving him an exotic, refined appearance. He was dressed in a very fashionable, human-style outfit, a dark blue tailored coat, white shirt, and slim black trousers. He was gazing fondly at Sira, who was sitting cross-legged on the floor opposite them, sipping from a steaming mug. She was laughing at something Abby had just said as the two women watched over the star-kissed human Cordolian baby. The child was lying on her belly, on a midnight blue mat that seemed woven from the stars itself. The fabric was intricate and sumptuous, and definitely not something that had been made on Earth. Abby sat beside Sira, winking at her friend good-naturedly as she stroked her baby's hair. The child clutched at some fantastical silver toy that occasionally emitted puffs of rainbow-colored holographic glitter. Each time it did so, the baby made soft little sounds of baby amusement. Two black dogs lay on the floor behind Abby, watching the Cordolian males with wary eyes. The scene was a perfect juxtaposition of normality and absurdity, and it took Noah's breath away.
"Ziara said you might want to rest here for a while," Elgin said as they crossed the threshold. "You can't be alone all the time, human. Sooner or later, you'll have to learn to harness the benefits of interacting with people. Just remember your barriers. With practice, it'll become easier."
"Don't I know it," Noah said dryly. She didn't mention that she'd been practicing her entire life. Hours upon hours of scales, arpeggios, exercises, and etudes had made her hands agile and powerful. But the days of hitting the keys until her hands and fingers ached seemed a distant memory now. These days, she couldn't even hold a damn tune in her head. All those concertos, memorized down to the last bar, note, accent, and crescendo, until she could play them with her eyes closed. They were all gone. The fucking SynCorp crazies had destroyed years of work with their insane surgery. Noah fought the urge to turn on her heel and walk out the door as the thoughts and voices of the room's occupants threatened to slide past her flimsy barriers. She closed her eyes, drawing upon the reassurance of her bond with Ashrael. Now that she knew what it felt like, it was easier to identify, and whatever had happened back there in the prison seemed to have strengthened it. Before, she hadn't been able to feel him when she was all the way back at the homestead. Now, it was as if she'd never known anything else.
"Remember what I taught you,"
Elgin reminded her, as they crossed the floor, coming to a halt in the center of the room. He turned and bowed respectfully to the two Cordolian males before shuffling away, leaving Noah standing awkwardly on her own.
"Yeah."
She took a deep breath and focused on her own thoughts. Slowly, the mental interference began to dissipate. Maybe she wasn't going insane after all.
"Noah, are you all right?"
Abby stood, carefully picking up her child from the dazzling star mat. She balanced the little one on her hip as she approached, cradling her head with one hand. The child chortled in response, her eyes glittering in delight. Abby smiled gently before shooting her husband a meaningful look. "I'm sorry. I should have suspected he was up to something. We were looking for you all over the place. I was worried, especially after I heard you'd gone in there. Believe me, I gave him an earful." She glared at the general, her lips pressed together in a disapproving frown. "I hope they didn't make you do anything silly, and I sure as hell hope they didn't force you into anything against your will." Noah glanced at General Tarak in alarm, desperately hoping Abby wasn't about to attract his attention. The last thing she needed right now was to be the target of his ire. The Cordolian returned his wife's stare, raising a silvery eyebrow. If he wasn't so damn intimidating, Noah could have sworn he was trying to look innocent. Abby's freckle-dusted nose twitched in irritation. "I swear, I'm going to..." She didn't get a chance to finish, because Tarak had risen from his seat and crossed the distance between them in a few fluid steps. He was all motion and no sound, appearing at his wife's side like a dark guardian shadow.
"You're going to do what, dear wife of mine?"
His tone was low and deadly, but there was a subtle undercurrent of amusement in his voice. It was so improbable that if Noah wasn't so hypersensitive to emotional nuances, she might have missed it. The baby cooed happily, reaching for her father with one chubby hand. Abby looked up, her eyes narrowing. "Don't think you can get away with distractions this time, O husband of mine. You leave my people alone. Noah's had a rough enough time as it is." The general's expression became a study in contradictions. His crimson eyes were scary and depthless, but his lips had curved into the beginnings of a smile. Without missing a beat, he reached out and allowed his daughter to grasp his thumb.
"Good girl, Ami," he murmured.
"It's okay," Noah said softly, interrupting their little domestic disagreement before this encounter could become any weirder. "I agreed to go. I wanted to go. It's hard to explain, but I needed to see this person for myself." She ran a hand over her scar, acutely conscious of General Tarak's scrutiny. Something warned her to be cautious here. "I don't know if there's anyone else on the planet who has what I have. Nobody seems to know anything except for Elgin and the prisoner. So, if I can help in some way and learn to better harness my abilities in return, then I think it's a fair deal."
"Prisoner?"
Abby growled, elbowing Tarak a little. He was as inscrutable as ever, and as she looked up at him with questioning eyes, he actually shrugged. On cue, little Ami laughed.
"I deal with threats in the appropriate manner," Tarak said curtly. "That is the way it has always been."
He pinned Noah with his deep red gaze.
"Sometimes a human perspective is needed. If we are the driving force, then you humans are the catalyst. That is what appears to have happened during your encounter with the Silent One."
As usual, he seemed to know everything in advance.
"Cryptic as ever, I see," Abby said wryly, as Tarak stroked his daughter's hair.
His hand, so large and rough and calloused, was gentle as he ran his fingers through her pale, wispy locks. His fingers were tipped with sharply pointed obsidian fingernails, and yet his touch was remarkably tender as his nails were withdrawn into the tips of his fingers, rendering them temporarily harmless. Noah couldn't help but stare. Someone had once told her that Cordolian fingernails were actually retractable claws. Noah's barriers weren't entirely effective against the swirl of emotions radiating from this strange little family. She soaked up some of the warmth surrounding the two proud parents, but the warm and fuzzies were tempered by the certainty that Papa Wolf here would probably rip the head off anyone who threatened his precious daughter or wife. Ah, Cordolians. She was beginning to understand them a little better, even if she still couldn't get her head around the way petite, considerate Abby had the general wrapped around her little finger. "Well, whatever happened in there, you seem better for it," Abby remarked. "You're less spaced out. You're calmer. I really do hope you're able to get a handle on your mind-reading abilities." She shook her head in amazement. "If someone had told me what you were capable of, I would have told them they were nuts. But I've experienced it for myself. You saved me from having a panic attack, or 10, when I was holed up in that horrible SynCorp facility. And for that, I can't thank you enough." A low growl emanated from Tarak. His jaw clenched, and his eyes darkened, turning the color of wine. He obviously didn't want to be reminded of that incident.
"I will never allow it to happen again."
Oh, that stray thought fragment hit Noah like a thunderbolt, surprising her with its vehemence. She concentrated on her bond, drawing on its power to block out any further thoughts. She really didn't want to see inside General Tarak's head. Blinking, she turned to Abby. "You were suffering terribly down there," Noah said quietly. "I didn't mean to do that. It just sort of happened." She remembered her horror when she'd sensed SynCorp had imprisoned and restrained a heavily pregnant Abby. She'd been a prisoner herself, powerless and forlorn, her mind fractured and vulnerable. The early days had been the worst. She hadn't been able to differentiate reality from fantasy, and she'd been plagued by terrible migraines. Most of the time, she'd been unable to do anything but lose herself in the precious music she'd been allocated. The audio buds had been a reward for her cooperation, and for a short period of time, she'd been able to telepathically transmit the music she'd heard to Abby. Their link had been lost shortly after Abby had given birth. "Accident or not, you helped me." Abby gently placed Ami in Tarak's arms. The general took his daughter without complaint, holding her against his broad chest, where she promptly snuggled against him and closed her eyes, making soft sounds of contentment. "So, let me give you the lowdown on Cordolians over a cup of Syrah's lemongrass tea, just so you know what you're getting yourself into." She glanced slyly at her husband, who was gently rocking baby Ami up and down. "They have a tendency to be all about the action, but scant on the detail."
"Humph," Tarak snorted softly. "Humans, on the other hand, have a tendency to talk too much and do too little. It's little wonder your species has failed to make any significant gains in the universe."
"It's called diplomacy, my love," Abby retorted, as she took Noah by the hand and guided her towards the kitchen. "And not everything has to be conquered. Come on, Noah. There are pumpkin scones in the kitchen."
"Someone has to maintain order in the universe, Amina," the general muttered, going still.
He was dark and formidable and protective, and his ethereal daughter had fallen asleep in his arms. He inclined his head.
"You wish me to take her for a while?"
"That would be nice, my love. She always falls asleep so quickly in your arms." They exchanged a look of such indulgent tenderness that Noah felt as if she were intruding somehow.
"It's that warm and fuzzy demeanor of his, isn't it?"
Zal laughed suddenly, drawing a sharp look from Tarak. Syrah rolled her eyes as she traipsed across the worn rug and arranged herself on Zal's lap. She grinned at Noah. "My prince is laughing now, but just wait until he's in Tarak's shoes. See how long Daddy Zalikian lasts then."
"What?"
You don't think I'd be as skilled as the general when it comes to putting our baby to sleep? Zhao feigned outrage. I'm 100 times more friendly and approachable than he is. Sira mock punched him on the arm. Tarak snorted. Abby smirked. The whole scenario was absolutely ridiculous. For the first time in longer than she could remember, a genuine smile threatened to spread across Noah's face. And just like that, some semblance of normality returned to her life. But her bond with Ashrael was still there, and it was stronger than before. A reminder that nothing in her life would ever be the same again. As she followed Abby into the kitchen, she couldn't help but think about the wild, mysterious man who had pinned her down so effortlessly, who probably could have killed her in the blink of an eye. She shuddered as she remembered the sensation of his cool fingers on her face. He'd been discovering her, exploring her, seeing her. He'd touched her with a strange kind of reverence, and their psychic bond had thrummed in response like a finely tuned guitar string. That brief moment had been totally at odds with what she'd been told about him. Slave. Assassin. Wraith. She shuddered. He was like an addictive drug. She knew he was bad for her, and yet she wanted more. Noah? Abby's concerned voice snapped her out of her reverie, as Noah's senses were tempted by the warm aromas of home-baked treats. You're doing that thing again. Are you sure you're okay?
Not really.
Yeah, she said instead, as her stomach growled. For now, she would just eat pumpkin scones and try not to think about Ashrael for a while. For better or worse, at least he was alive. Chapter 14. He was weightless, and it was blissfully cold. His mind was trapped in a fog. His heart was beating far too slowly. His cocqui wrapped around it like a protective cocoon. Perhaps this was what death felt like. Slowly, he extended his second sight and found that he was floating in a tank of restoration fluid. Stasis. Tubes and wires extended from his body, and a mask supplying oxygen covered his face. He kicked his legs and experimentally made a fist. His movements were sluggish, but he was mostly intact. Ah, he'd been stabbed, attacked from behind as he came face to face with her. The human who had infiltrated his mind in her own crazy, stumbling manner. What the fuck was that all about? They'd tried to break him, but the mind bond had failed to budge. It had been too much for his already weakened mind state. He'd started to drift away, tempted by the alluring slipstream. He'd been entranced by the infinite swirling energy of the universe, where the energy of souls returned after death. He'd gone there. His mind had been slipping away. He'd been dying. And he'd been about to welcome the sweet embrace of the goddess. And then she'd touched him, and a jolt of searing energy had shot through him. His body had responded before his mind had registered anything. He'd sat bolt upright and had his hand around her neck, thinking her an enemy. He'd been so close to crushing her windpipe. She probably didn't realize how close she'd been to death. He shuddered. He actually didn't want to kill this one. Fragile, clumsy human that she was. Their bond felt stronger than ever now. Ridiculous. She shouldn't have gotten so close to him. That crude little attempt at breaking the mind bond had actually strengthened her bond with him. His energy resonated so nicely with hers, and her presence made his Kakui sing. Did she understand that she'd just done the impossible? Hasarian was one in a billion.
Can you hear me, Katach?
The medic's voice sounded hollow through the speakers of his breathing apparatus. He nodded once, not trusting himself to speak. He hadn't sensed her presence, but that's because his Kakui was tied up in preserving and healing his damaged flesh. The energy of one's life force could accelerate healing. That was one of the first things he'd learned during his training.
We've repaired the severed arteries in your chest with surgical nanites, but nanites are in short supply, so your muscles and ribs are going to have to heal on their own. The stasis tank should help. Are you in pain? Do you want more sedative?
No, he said softly, shaking his head. Anything but that.
He'd rather feel pain than be semi-unconscious.
I was to sedate you heavily if I sensed any threat, but for now, I will hold off. Don't do anything stupid, Katach. You seem to have just recently found your voice. Have we made a believer of you yet?
Her tone was darkly ironic.
A laugh escaped Ashrael, sending a sharp stabbing pain through his chest. The pain was a welcome companion because it told him without a doubt that he was alive. Tentatively, he diverted his Kakui from around his vital arteries, sending it out into his surroundings. He was still on Earth. He was in a small medical facility of some sort, and only Ziara was in the room. Several guards were stationed throughout the facility, their auras burning brightly in his mind's eye. But there was something else. Something was not right. A strange, familiar sensation tickled the back of his mind, making fine bumps ripple across his skin. There was someone else in here. Their presence was heavily cloaked, but Ashrael was one of the most skilled of his kind, and he instantly knew the trace for what it was.
You think you can hide from me, assassin?
The intruder was good. He'd managed to come this far without alerting the guards. But that didn't surprise Ashrael. Infiltration was what the Silent Ones did best. He'd even managed to evade Ashrael's notice until he was very, very close. But that was only because Ashrael had been distracted by his injuries. Clearly, the assassin had chosen to take advantage of the situation. In his current state, Ashrael was significantly weakened, and the medical facility was far less secure than the prison. There were more openings to exploit.
Medic,
he said slowly, focusing his attention on Ziara as he began to yank the tubes and wires from his body.
Get out of the way.
What?
She looked up from her monitors, confusion radiating from her.
What are you doing? You can't just...
Of course, she wouldn't be able to see the assassin. He was cloaked in the Kakui, invisible to all but those with the ability, and even then, one had to know what they were looking at. Shock radiated from the assassin upon hearing Ashrael speak, but he didn't falter. His footsteps silent as he stalked towards Ziara. If she put up any resistance or made the wrong move, she was as good as dead.
Ziara, he repeated, his voice heavy with warning. If you value your life, do as I say and move now.
Her instincts were good, but he expected no less of an experienced combat medic. Without hesitation, she dove to the side as a bolt of plasma streaked through the air. It seemed to come out of nowhere. The stasis tank rocked as the plasma bolt hit it, melting its thick walls. Restoration fluid began to pour from a gaping hole, bubbling and steaming due to the sheer amount of energy generated by the blast. If Asrael had been any slower, he would have been killed, but he'd pulled himself to one side at the last moment. The top of the tank was sealed, so he forced his way through the newly created hole in its side. He ignored the agonizing pain shooting through his ribcage as the boiling restoration fluid seared his skin. Pain was of no consequence. His heart and major arteries were intact, and that was all that mattered. As long as his heart was beating, as long as blood flowed through his body, he could fight and he could kill. He gathered his Kakwi around him, focusing intently on his surroundings. There, something comes. Move. He dropped and rolled as another bolt of searing plasma narrowly missed him. Despite the pain in his back and chest, he forced himself to move with godlike speed. His missing left arm didn't throw him off balance. He'd spent an endless amount of time getting used to his new body in his dark cell. Weapon. He needed a weapon. He cast his second sight around the room, searching for something he could use. Move. He twisted to the side, avoiding another bolt of plasma. Here. Ziara produced a Kalidom dagger from somewhere within her robes and slid it across the floor. Ashrael's hand shot out. Without missing a beat, he grabbed it, flicked his wrist, and threw it at his attacker. There was a grunt of pain as the plasma gun fell from the Silent One's hand. The dagger had hit his left wrist, slicing tendons and arteries. Unable to maintain his cloak of invisibility any longer, the assassin revealed himself, his Kakwi swirling around him. A smooth, expressionless mask covered his face. He wore the death mask. That meant he would not stop until Asrael was dead. "So, you have finally come for me," Asrael growled, his indignation rising. They must have received word of his capture. He was no longer their most valuable tool. Now he was a liability. "You should have brought another, because you alone cannot kill me, even when I am like this." He was taunting his opponent, trying to get a reaction out of him, but the assassin remained silent. His attacker was committed now. He was acting under a powerful compulsion, and the only thing that could stop him from killing Asrael now would be his own death. Kill or die. Those were the only two options a Silent One had. Asrael knew it all too well. He'd been there thousands of times. The assassin lunged, a short stabbing sword appearing in his right hand. He aimed for Ashrael's chest, but Ashrael spun, evading the strike with impossible speed. "No matter how fast you are, I'm faster," he taunted, some of his old arrogance returning. The implacable assassin aimed the blade at his chest, but Asrael was already moving out of the way, using his Kakwi sense to read his attacker's intent. The reason he was so hard to kill was that he was always one step ahead. But he was not at full strength. With only one arm and his back still healing from a vicious stab wound, he was slower than usual. Alarm flashed through his mind. It was the human. She sensed the danger through their bond. She sensed his pain, and clearly it troubled her.
"Are you okay?"
She was getting better at mind speech. To learn to broadcast over such a distance in such a short period of time was an impressive feat.
"Yes,"
he said, before pushing her away. He couldn't afford any distractions right now. He had to end this quickly. Asrael ducked, evading a vicious stroke that would have separated his head from his neck. He rolled, and with his arm outstretched, he scooped up the plasma gun. It had flown from his attacker's hand and was lying in a pool of restoration fluid. All the while, his Kakwi was extended, tracking and anticipating the assassin's every move. The gun fit snugly into his hand. It was a familiar friend, and he knew exactly what to do. Turn Aim. Fire. Boom. Searing plasma fire hit his attacker in the chest, and the force of the blast threw the assassin back against a wall. He hit it with a dull thud and slumped, sliding down to the floor. Drawn by the noise, several of the guards had appeared, their weapons drawn. Ashrael didn't waste any time. He walked over to the fallen attacker and crouched down, pulling the death mask from his face.
"Why did they send you on a fool's errand, brother?"
The assassin said nothing. He lifted his sword and tried to stab Ashrael in the gut, but his arm was weak. His kakui became faint as his life force drained away. Ashrael wouldn't get any answers out of this one. The assassin was a slave to his mind bond, and he would die a wretched death.
"I presume there will be others."
He watched as the short sword slipped from the assassin's hand. The Silent One could no longer offer any resistance. He had sustained a direct hit to his chest with a plasma bolt, and his injuries were beyond repair. He was hovering between life and death, his arm hopelessly outstretched, as if he were trying to will death upon Ashrael. As his life force faded, so too did his mind bond. Eventually, his arm dropped to his side.
"They are watching you," he said,
the dark cloud of the killing compulsion clearing from his mind.
"You and the gifted human. She has rare untapped power. Valuable power. They will take her and kill you. They won't stop until you're dead. A broken mind bond is a death sentence."
The nameless assassin's mind speech tapered off as he weakened. They wanted to kill him? He could have guessed as much. Someone with his particular skill set was too dangerous to let loose on the universe, especially if he had reason to turn on the Empire. He could handle that.
"Bring it on."
Whoever they sent after him would find he wasn't so easy to kill. What he couldn't stomach was their discovery of the human. They would take her and exploit her power. They would drain her until she was a mere husk. As soon as the Empire had her in their grasp, her life would be over.
"May the goddess have mercy on your wretched soul, brother."
Ashrael slid his fingers over the assassin's eyes as his life faded away, closing them. Now that the threat had passed, he was filled with sorrow for the nameless one. The forlorn, lifeless figure slumped against the wall could have been him. Slowly, Ashrael turned around. Two menacing warriors stood over him. He wasn't surprised. He'd already known they were there. He'd sensed their approach long ago. In the background, Ziara had picked herself up and managed to retrieve her weapon. She watched silently as the soldiers closed in on Ashrael.
"What in Cain's hells is going on, assassin?"
One of the warriors had a plasma gun aimed at his head. The other had his hand on the hilt of his sword. He glanced at Ashrael's fallen attacker, surprise radiating from him.
"How the fuck did he get in here?"
Ashrael shrugged.
"A cloaked aura, a skin suit for invisibility, stealth walking, patience, skill. Waiting for the right opening to appear. A bit of Kim. Your security is good, but nothing is impenetrable, and there is no place in the universe that we can't infiltrate."
Pride filled his voice. He took a perverse kind of satisfaction in seeing these formidable warriors thrown off balance.
"You have not had much experience in fighting us, because we never used to be your enemies. You still haven't got a clue what we're capable of."
"Fucking ghosts,"
the soldier muttered, shaking his head. His irritation was palpable.
Can't believe he evaded our notice. How is it you were able to kill him? I thought your psychic shackles prevented you from turning against your own.
They did, Ashrael admitted. But I am using my voice now, am I not?
A bleak smile crossed his face.
A silent one no longer.
The other warrior, the one they called Callan, remarked, sounding darkly amused.
He turned to his comrade.
So, what do we do now, Rickle? Put him back in restraints, or give him a sword and a gun?
He hasn't shot at us yet, Rickle remarked. That's a good sign.
Could be he's just biding his time, waiting to turn on us when he sees an opening.
Could be, Ashrael agreed mildly, his tone darkly sarcastic.
Could be that killing one of my own kind was just part of the plan.
A sudden wave of anger coursed through him as the terrible weight of his past crashed down upon him.
Could be that I don't enjoy this newfound freedom of mine. Maybe I'm just waiting to become a slave again.
Watch out, the silent one bites, Rickle taunted. That's the second time you've surprised me now. The first time, I thought for certain you were going to snap that strange human's neck.
Without that human, I would be dead, Ashrael growled.
He wasn't sure why he suddenly felt so defensive of her. She was a clueless creature, with no self-control and no understanding of the immense power she had at her disposal. He'd never encountered anyone like her. She was delicate in appearance, and oh so soft to the touch. He remembered the feel of her skin as he traced the contours of her face. Her perfect features were forever imprinted in his mind. She'd trembled slightly, her moist lower lip wavering as he grazed it with his thumb.
"What a ridiculous species," he muttered, shaking his head.
For some reason, the two First Division warriors just laughed, making Ashrael wonder if he was the butt of some inside joke.
"Help me!"
He froze as overwhelming terror filled his mind. It wasn't his fear. It was the human. Her distress came ringing across their bond, loud and clear. She was being attacked.
"Buck."
He started to move. On his part, there was no question about what to do. He had to ensure she survived. The First Division warriors were crawling all over the place, but aside from the general, he wasn't sure whether the others really knew how to fight a silent one.
Boom, boom.
He raised his arm and fired two precise shots, catching Rickle and Callan dead center in the chest. "Sorry," he called over his shoulder as they fell, swearing at him in Cordolian. The plasma bolt would hurt like a bitch, but they would survive. Unlike him, they had advanced nano-armor protecting their bodies. He'd gotten lucky. He'd caught them off guard. There was no way they'd let him escape otherwise. The warriors swore.
"Told you we couldn't trust him,"
Callan grunted, his voice thick with pain as the two soldiers picked themselves up and started to give chase. Ashrael's body was on fire. The stab wound in his back was bleeding again, and his skin stung where the boiling restoration fluid had scalded him. But he didn't care. Pain was a trivial distraction, nothing more. His pursuers were fast, but Ashrael was faster. He drew on his Kokwi, channeling energy into his legs. He extended his senses and detected a soldier in his path. With a Kokwi giving him second sight, he knew everything. The layout of the facility, the people in his way, the exit points, and the hidden spaces. If he wore a skin suit and a death mask, he could have made himself absolutely invisible. But for now,
he had to rely on speed and a bit of blind luck. He entered a narrow corridor, firing multiple blasts to clear his path. His opponent had no choice but to get out of the way. Another guard appeared. Ashrael fired again and again until the plasma gun clicked empty. It was out of charge, but at least the soldier had ducked out of the way, clearing his path. He threw the gun aside as he ran. Without charge, it was useless. Grunting with exertion, Ashrael pumped his legs, ignoring the pain in his chest. It felt as if his rib cage were being squeezed from both sides in a giant clamp. He focused his cocky and forced himself to go even faster, shooting through the exit and out into the windy night. The fresh night air hit him in the face and soothed his burned skin. The soft sand under his feet didn't slow him at all. He had no weapons, but it didn't matter. After all, he was a weapon, and nothing was going to get between him and the fiend who dared attack his Saurian. The First Division warriors followed him, a rain of plasma fire streaking through the air as he ran across the wide desert expanse. He was several steps ahead of them, and he veered left and right, avoiding the deadly blasts as he widened his lead. Freedom. It was his at last, but he didn't have time to enjoy it. He had to reach her. She might be a physically weak, clumsy human, but she was the only person who had ever tried to reach out to him. She was the only one who had ever shown concern for him. A mythical, one-in-a-billion Saurian. There was no other way they could have bonded so quickly. The bond between two Saurian was more powerful than any mind bond, and theirs was strengthening with every passing moment. Every time they connected, every time they engaged in mind speech, every time they touched, their psychic connection grew stronger. No wonder she'd broken his silence so quickly. What would he do if her end suddenly went silent? Her emotions resonated at the back of his mind, intensifying as he drew nearer. She was afraid, and her fear spurred him on like nothing else. It was as if liquid accelerant had been injected into his veins. He ran even faster, his feet whipping up dust as he streaked over a small hill, reaching a motley collection of buildings. She was in there. He could feel her aura compared to the others. It blazed as brightly as a supergiant star, dwarfing everything else beside it. How had he not noticed its brilliance until now? Whoever dared lay a hand on her would reckon with him, and Ashrael had never learned to spare his targets. It wasn't in his nature. In his line of work, mercy had never been an option. Chapter 15. Noah sat alone in the kitchen, inhaling the refreshing aroma of her lemongrass tea. Abby had apologetically left her to go and feed little Ami, who had started crying shortly after they'd sat down. Shortly afterwards, Sierra had stuck her head in and bid Noah good night, stifling a yawn. It was close to midnight now, and Noah was grateful for the warmth of this strange, cozy little kitchen. She was also grateful for the kindness of the two Earth women, who appeared to sympathize with her situation. To her relief, they hadn't asked too many questions, instinctively seeming to understand that she wasn't ready for that. She needed time to adjust. Things were happening too quickly. She took a bite out of her third scone, savoring the combination of moist pumpkiny goodness and the richness of real butter. She hadn't tasted real butter in such a long time. It was such a rarity in this day and age, and it was amazing. She was absolutely ravenous. Her appetite was back, and for the first time in longer than she could remember, she was wolfing down her food. Perhaps all that psychic work took energy. Noah studied her surroundings, noting the old-fashioned gas oven and the worn wooden benchtops.
Various pots and pans hung from the ceiling, suspended from large hooks. In the center of the kitchen was a battered wooden table, upon which sat a ceramic jug, adorned with a spray of yellow flowers. It was a homely, rustic place, and it looked like something straight out of the 21st century. One might even be tempted to forget that there were Cordolians beyond these walls. But that was impossible, because her bond was a constant reminder that Ashrael lurked in the background. For better or worse, she was tied to him now. A few minutes ago, she'd caught a flash of his pain, and without realizing what she was doing, she'd reached out to him. "Are you okay?"
"Yes."
His response had been curt and snappy, and he'd actively pushed her away, giving off a now-is-not-the-time kind of vibe. Perhaps he just needed time to heal. Noah sighed as she sipped her tea. Her strange companion could be tender one minute and abrasive the next. There was so much she didn't know about him. Hundreds of questions flooded her mind, and she wondered whether any of them would ever be answered. She stood and made her way across to the stove, carrying her tea. The scones sat in a warmer box atop the stove, emitting a mouth-watering aroma. As she reached out to open the box, the fine hairs on the back of her neck rose. Something wasn't right. She felt the same way as she did when she'd encountered Ashrael for the very first time. Spooked, she turned around. The air seemed to shimmer in front of her, and she felt movement. But there was nobody there. The air wobbled again, and for a split second, she thought she saw a half-invisible figure moving towards her. Then it disappeared. She blinked, wondering if she was imagining things. There. The air in front of her seemed to move, and at last she felt the presence. It was eerily silent, and it radiated menace. This thing, whatever it was, meant her harm. Noah froze. The energy radiating from her stalker was oppressive and terrifying. It threatened to paralyze her. She was suddenly filled with the certainty that she would die here.
"No, you need to move."
There was no time to think. There was no time to hesitate. She raised her arm and splashed her tea at the intruder. The liquid coated her attacker's invisible form, leaving a strange, glistening wet patch. The tea was near boiling temperature, but her stalker didn't flinch. A near-silent hiss of pain was his only reaction. Noah's psychic barriers were slipping. Fear had scattered what little control she had. In desperation, she reached across her bond, trying to alert Ashrael. She didn't know why. He was injured and probably under heavy guard. What could he do? She retreated back into the corner, her breath coming in heavy gasps. The dark aura in front of her split into two. She faced not one, but two enemies. "What do you want?" Glancing around, she searched for a weapon. A long kitchen knife sat on the counter. She picked it up, brandishing it in front of her. Her hand trembled. "Help!" she screamed as she tried to gather her psychic power. She tried to replicate the thing she'd done the first time she'd pushed Ashrael out of her head, but her concentration was shattered. She couldn't grasp even the smallest thread of her power. A gloved hand covered her mouth, silencing her. She bit down on the attacker's fingers, but there was no respite. Another hand closed around her neck, applying slight pressure.
"Move and you're dead."
His voice rang out inside her head, loud and clear.
"Drop the knife or I'll crush your windpipe."
She hesitated as she contemplated stabbing him in the gut. He squeezed, cutting off her air. Noah gasped and choked.
"Do it."
Reluctantly, she let the knife drop from her fingers. It clattered uselessly across the tiled floor. Noah stiffened.
What do you want with me?
He didn't answer. He just pulled her backwards, tightening his grip around her neck, his other hand clamped across her face. A muffled cry of pain escaped her. There was a loud crash, and the other attacker stumbled backwards, sending the warmer box full of scones flying. A fully armored Cordolian warrior had appeared, wielding a pair of long black swords.
"Harm her, and you are both dead," he snarled.
Although his features were hidden behind a black helm, Noah recognized the general's voice. He became a black blur as he stalked forward, hunting his invisible prey. The other assassin revealed himself at last.
He was clad in all white, a form-fitting, flexible suit covering him from neck to toe.
His face was hidden behind a featureless white mask. Two tadpole-shaped black marks were painted where the eyes were supposed to be, but the mask had no eye holes. A wet patch had bloomed across his chest, the result of her tea-throwing efforts. He rushed forward, a plasma gun appearing from nowhere as Tarak dodged a searing bolt of blue plasma. The general somehow managed to slash the assassin's lower leg as the silent one leaped backwards, drawing first blood. Black blood oozed from a cut across the assassin's shin. Tarak sheathed one of his swords and pulled his own plasma gun, firing off two quick shots. The assassin didn't slow down, seeming to anticipate the general's every move. Noah's invisible companion continued to pull her away from the action, his unrelenting grip partially blocking off her air supply. She struggled to breathe. The lack of oxygen was making it difficult to think. Her vision blurred, and she completely lost her grip on her mental barriers. The thoughts of the three terrifying Cordolians flooded into her mind, and suddenly her head was filled with death and destruction. Panic threatened to engulf her. Darkness crashed in on her from all sides. The hands around her neck and face tightened as the assassin dragged her away from the fighting. They exited through a screen door, bursting out into the dark night. Distant shouts echoed through the still air. Somewhere, off in the distance, a dog started to bark incessantly.
"Let go of me!"
Once again, Noah tried to gather her power, but it eluded her. It was like grasping at fine threads tossed about in a gale-force wind. There was too much chaos swirling around her. In desperation, she reached out, looking for the only thing that could anchor her.
"Ashrael."
"I'm coming."
His mind voice rang out with deadly certainty.
She didn't know how it was possible, but somehow he was coming for her. The silent one took his hand away from her face, and she gasped for breath. Faster than she could comprehend, a blade was pressed against the back of her neck.
"Don't speak. Move and do exactly as I say. You are the property of the Empire now."
They kept to the shadows as they made their way down the long veranda, heading for a grove of trees at the end of the main house. Noah couldn't see much. The sky was overcast, and the air was thick with dust and moisture. A flash lit up the sky, revealing a grove of trees in the distance. That's where they were headed. A low rumble of thunder followed soon afterwards, accompanied by a gust of warm wind. Impossibly, the air was loaded with the scent of rain. As they walked, her captor released his grip on her neck and pulled her wrists together behind her back, binding them with some kind of restraint. All the while, he held his blade against the back of her neck, reminding her of her helplessness. As they marched towards the stand of trees, Noah stumbled, struggling to keep up with her captor's brutal pace. The wind whipped at her clothes, and bits of airborne dust stung her eyes. He grabbed her arm to steady her, propelling her forward with merciless force. Lightning illuminated their world again, and in the distance, Noah saw a pale figure.
I'm coming.
His aura engulfed her, merging with the oncoming storm.